Pocket Size Pep Talk, the podcast that can help energize your business and your life with a quick, inspiring message. Now, here's your host, Rob Jollis.
Welcome. For those of you who've never listened to my podcast, great to have you here. If I'm on my game today, this is a show that will inspire you, motivate you, entertain you, and I hope most importantly, inform you. And I try and do this by bringing topics and guests from all walks and corners of the globe. And the only thing I ask for those of you who have not done so is give the show a rating, post a comment, and if you're feeling extra motivated, go tell a friend. Now, you're going to love today's show because I get to introduce you to J.V. Venable, a very unique character. And when he hits the mic, you'll understand just what I mean. J.V. may be the luckiest man you'll ever meet, and he's lived a life of that only a rock star could dream of. He's led teams as small as two people, as large as 1,100, in both peacetime and in combat. Most notably was his time as a commander and demonstration leader of the U.S. Air Force Thunderbirds. He is an author, a speaker on the topic of leadership, overcoming adversity, and building high-performance teams. J.V. Venable, welcome to the show.
I'm Jollis. It's a pleasure to be with you, sir.
There you go. Yeah, you don't need to sir me, lad, but thank you. You can tell the Air Force and J.V.'s coming out of them right out of the gate. J.V., you spent 26 years in the Air Force. So, we've talked. My dad was a Marine. You chose the Air Force. What made you pick that path?
Well, first off, it was easier than being a Marine, I would say. My hat's off to your dad, and his life absolutely exudes through you. I know few more disciplined people in my life than one Rob Jollis. I guess if I was to say, the Air Force kind of picked me in a very odd way. I wasn't a very bright kid, and I'm not sure many things have changed over the years, but when I was my dad was a semi-pro baseball player, and he gave me a baseball when I was like 3 or 4 years old, and he would come home every afternoon, and I'd be throwing that ball against the back of our little cinder block house, and every day he'd round the corner, and I'd throw that ball up on the roof, and it would get stuck in the gutter, and he would look at me and give me that somewhat questionable look of what am I raising, and then he would lift me up and actually put me up on the roof. It was that low of a back hang, how the backyard kind of slid into the house. And I would get up on the roof and I would run around acting like I was looking for that baseball. But for whatever reason, I just loved being up there, and it would take me a while to find it. And one day I was up there in three Kingfisher biplanes right out of World War II came over the house, and they were so low and so close together. Their big radial engines were so loud. It just, I mean, my heart started pounding out of my chest, Rob. And the pilots rocked their wings and waved at me. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget that moment. And that's kind of when this thought of flying entered my life. And honestly, I don't know why I never forgot that or never gave up on it, but it stayed with me for the rest of my life. And that's why I kind of picked the Air Force.
And it, as you said, and it kind of picked you. That's an amazing story. I've never heard you tell that story. And, you know, it just reminds you of some of the little things that we do in our lives have a massive impact on those around us. I think I was 4 years old when this older woman, and I think she was in her mid-90s, I was at her house, and she introduced me to the little engine that could, the book. And I got to tell you, that was me on the roof with the wings waving at you. That book, that story of I Think I Can, sort of stayed with me for my whole life. And as a matter of fact, one of my more obscure books, I may add, but one of my books I actually dedicated to that woman and the little engine that could. So there's a piece of trivia back at you. I also get a kick out of your story because I give a presentation every now and then about luck. And I talk about me throwing this ball against a wall. I was two on the wall and one on the roof. That was sort of my three out pattern, but I did it for years. So there's something that J.V. Venable and Rob Jollis share. We both like throwing balls against houses, apparently, and each of us gets different lessons from it. But That's fascinating. And I want to go back on one more thing that you said. You know, you mentioned that my dad taught me discipline. Yes, he did. But in true Marine fashion, it really wasn't an option, the discipline in our family. That didn't find me. That was shoved into me. But I am grateful. But I do smile and go, gee, you know, we never really had an option of let me think about that. Yeah, I think I'll do that. It was just, how fast will we do what we were just told to do?
And so Rob, I've never heard you tell the little engine that could story, but that just absolutely defines you. I mean, yeah. You've got to be the second most competitive person I've ever met.
Well, now, of course, we may have to. We'll be back in a moment, ladies and gentlemen, while JV and I work this part out. But all right, how about 1A and 1B? And we won't claim who's 1A. Right. We'll just leave it there. There's that moment in your life where in a sense your life has changed and the trajectory changes and now the path begins. And JV and I both work with people in career transition. And so you'll hear me speak of the path a lot. It's never a direct path, but it's a path. We begin to forge that path. And your path took you to an amazing area, not just time with the Air Force, but time with the Thunderbirds. Was that part of the dream?
Yeah, you know, at four, I didn't know much about life. I just knew I wanted to fly, like those guys that came over the house. When I first started school, it turned out I struggled in reading, but I just loved, glancing at pictures and seeing images. And in 1969, I think the World Book Encyclopedia landed on our doorstep, and I flipped right to the section on the Air Force, and there were four supersonic F-100s. They called them Super Sabers, painted red, white, and blue on the nose. And it was the Thunderbirds. And for whatever reason, my noggin glommed onto the first, the lead airplane. And I said, that's what I wanted to do. And from that point, it was just putting one foot in front of the other and figuring out what I needed to do to get in the Air Force, to get to flight school. And I figured if I finally got in the fighter, the Air Force would just realize how good a guy I was and then pick me out of the litter, and then I would have that job. That's not exactly how it worked out, but it's certainly the path that I put myself on, which was, you know, looking back, pretty fascinating.
Really amazing. And, you know, now we've got two things that we've sort of uncovered. The fact that you struggled with reading. And, you know, some people would see that, and some people may have children or themselves have struggled with reading or retention. And, you know, we sort of see that as an unfortunate situation, or, you know, it certainly makes life a little bit more difficult. But I'm also a card-carrying member of the struggle to read a little bit. Now, when we were in school, there was no they never labeled us. They just sort of said, read it again, read it again. Right. Yeah, we were the read it again group. And, you know, I read it four times. How are they getting all that out of what I just read? I can't remember two thirds of that. But right. You know, what happens is we compensate and we begin to build muscles in different areas. So you heard JV's. For me, okay, I may not be the best reader, but I can speak. I can communicate. I can do it a different way. And so in a sense, that muscle got exercised. But I would think for both of us, your trajectory may have changed if you were a bookworm. Sorry, but if you read a whole lot, not that there's anything wrong with being a bookworm. and mine may well have changed too, but we compensate and we kind of fight for our own path. And so I think that was actually part of it for the two of us. It's interesting. And boy, let's not diminish the fact that there's being in the Air Force and then being in the Thunderbirds. And JV, you're very kind, but to sort of just put it as one foot in front of the other. Now, I'm a believer in one foot in front of the other. We don't make that direct path to that goal, but that had to be a lot of very challenging one foot in front of the others for you, but you hung in there and you got it.
Yeah. So it's, you find something that you like to do, you know, lots of challenges will come up, and most of those are really wonderful things where you find somebody to try to pace and maybe outpace on the track. And, And when I got into the flying business, you know, just learning to be better and spending time with it again, because I wasn't a very quick study, book study, but I applied a lot of time in it. And the people that I found in the squadrons that I was with who did the same thing, who were working late, who were in Saturdays and Sundays, they became my closest friends. And then we started running faster together. And I think that's one of the biggest gifts that you can get along your life are the friends who set a pace for you that you try to match and maybe beat on occasion.
Yeah, you know, I wrote a piece about this one time. It was probably 5 years ago, and I was my dorm, believe it or not, circa 1979 from the University of Maryland. We still hang together, believe it or not. Yeah. And we entered a 200-mile race. It was a 12-person, two-van relay, and there were almost 200 other teams. And so each of us was running. All 12 of us were kind of on our own running. And when we got together and ran that race, and this is not a coincidence, each one of us, 12 for 12, set personal bests on their race numbers. Now, why is that? Well, just like you, you know, you can try as hard as you want, but and I know you wrote a book about drafting, which we may want to get into, but the fact is we weren't drafting off each other physically, but maybe we were drafting off each other mentally. Maybe the fact that I'm not just trying to go fast for me, I'm going fast for those other 11 people. And by doing that in each one of us, sort of having that mindset without speaking it out loud, we were able to achieve, you know, an amazing race, and we did win our category for, you know, a bunch of schlubs that were all in their 50s. We didn't have one person on that team that was under 50 years old, and I think we came in sixth or seventh out of a couple hundred. We were flying, and we're not that great of runners, but it was an amazing time. So I hear you, you know, it is amazing. Amazing.
Rob, your thought is just absolutely spot on. And you know, drafting, people think about it, you know, NASCAR and stuff, and that's the physical side of it, but there's emotional drafting, and that's exactly what you described. It's this power of presence. You can literally get physical benefit by being around people and drafting off of them, but the emotions are even more powerful, and I think that's what you described it.
Yeah, you know, I guess I was kind of lucky in stumbling into this, but when I coached 52 teams in my lifetime, all kids, different ages, but it was a mandatory when I got a team, the first thing we do for the first practice was go have dinner together. And if one person can't make it, then change the date and give me another one. But we're not going to stop until we get something on the calendar that allows all of us to have a simple dinner together. And I think the parents thought, oh, what a sweet coach. He's lucky, you know, he's making it. What a nice thing. I'm actually was very selfish. I had a history of winning teams. And I knew that if they play for each other, we're going to exceed expectations. Can't control a lot of things, but I will exceed expectations of this team. But we can't play for ourselves. We have to play for each other. And there needs to be a process for that. And so I stumbled upon it by having them out to dinner, taking them out to a King's Dominion, something like that, and getting them to truly care about each other. Once that happened, boom. Then we played real good basketball, but it was one before the other.
Yeah, building that commitment begins with building connective tissue. And that's what you are a master of.
Well, but like I said, sometimes we kind of stumble on it, but I read your book, tell everybody the name of that book of yours, by the way, before we forget.
Now, Breaking the Trust Barrier. It's a great read. It's if you want to learn a little bit about the Thunderbirds and life as an Air Force pilot, you can certainly pick that out in this book, but building this commitment, loyalty, and trust, and learning how to develop that in a team is what it's all about. I really, to this day, enjoy going back through that and glossing through the memories and building that picture back of what it means to be a part of an incredible team.
Yeah, you know, for those you know, who've had the privilege of writing a book, or if you've dreamed about writing a book, what you'll realize is that once you write that book, it really becomes like one of your children. Yeah. JB has two boys, but he's got two and a half because the book becomes like your child. It's not perfect, but it's out there in the world and it's trying to make its way through that world. And we're doing what we can to help that book make its way. But a lot of it has to do with the book and we're just trying to enable it. But I know we authors care a great deal about our book and our message. And so that's why I happen to really like on a podcast like this, getting inside you a little bit and hearing about that. You mentioned challenges that you've had challenges and I think everybody's had challenges, but it's not whether we have a challenge, it's how we overcome those challenges. So for you, and you've mentioned a couple of them, but for somebody who's listening, how would you instruct them to overcome those challenges and the challenges that you've overcome?
For me, challenges in my life have turned out to be at the time, I certainly didn't recognize it, but they turned out to be my biggest gifts. The greatest gifts I've received in my life have been the things that have made me better, and almost all of those have begun with a challenge. I got in the Air Force, and I was, you don't think about doing, great things, but I got to be a pretty good fighter pilot because I loved what I was doing. And the Thunderbird commander position, you can apply for that about the 16, 17 year point of a career. And I got within arm's reach of that when I was diagnosed with cancer. And that's a stunning thing to be told that you have a disease that may take your life. Now, my mom passed away from cancer. My two grandfathers passed away from cancer. And when I was diagnosed, my baby sister was in her seventh year of ovarian cancer. And so I basically took that the way most people do initially, like you're hitting the head with a 2x4 and you're absolutely stunned. But what I learned out of that and how I started coming out of that position was focusing on something bigger than myself, a big dream out in front of me. And so I put that dream of being the Thunderbird commander out in front of me. And I couldn't tell anybody. My doctors told me I would never fly again. And they told me to prepare for the battle of my life. But when they told me I would never get to do what I love to do again, it was one of the greatest things they could have said to me. It's the challenge of being told you can't do something. And then I just started putting one foot in front of the other. I got in the best physical shape of my life and continued heading one foot in front of the other toward that dream. I figured if I got halfway there, Rob, I would at least be back in a cockpit. But 3 years later, I stepped into the job of my lifetime. And that journey made being there all that much more special.
Wow. Wow. Folks, if you were looking for a pocket-sized pep talk, you just got one. That's an incredible story. And, we keep using the term one foot in front of the other. I'm going to crowbar a thought into that if I could. My vision, and JB, you tell me if you may have a different vision of that, but sometimes people hear that and they go, well, can you spell that out a little? How do we measure that? I think what it is it's not The goal was to get back in the cockpit. We know that. Sometimes the reason why we fail at our goals is because we keep looking at the cockpit. We go, I'm not in the cockpit yet. I must be failing. But when JV says one foot in front of the other, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think what you mean is setting small, attainable goals that lead to the bigger goal. So we're not overwhelmed by the challenge of the end game. We build momentum through the smaller steps of those smaller goals. Am I close?
Oh yeah. So the for me, the first thing to do is when you fall forward, and it's not a very appetizing or appealing look, but you're going to get a face full of gravel several times in your life. And the big thing to do is fall toward your goal. And then when you get up, brush yourself off, focus on that long term, and then set two or three intermediary goals, just like you said. And I had to, beat a medical evaluation board. So the the part of that that I could control was to get myself in as great a shape as I could. So that was one. And then there were a couple other professional things that I had to do to make those second and third steps. And then all I could do was that. Once I was done with those three steps, the Air Force had to make decisions that I basically had an input for, but ultimately that was, do I get back in a cockpit? And if I do get back in a cockpit, am I competitive enough to get into that application process for the Thunderbirds? And as stones are thrown at you, stones are also laid at your feet. And as soon as I came out of that medical evaluation board and the promotion process, the Thunderbirds put out a request in the open net for applications for the commander and demonstration leader position. And that's not the end of the story ever, but I'll tell you that just having that dream, those goals, and your willingness to put one foot towards each one of those stepping stones, when you land there, you take your breath, you look around, you appreciate what you've done, but then you keep marching forward. And who knows where you can go in life if you just take those fundamental ideas in your mind and execute.
Beautiful. I scribbled a note down off to the side. When you write your autobiography, I one of the titles that I want you to put in that hopper as you count all the titles, I think A Face Full of Gravel, the J.V. Venables story may just be in the cards there. I immediately got that visualization. That's what a professional speaker and an author can do for you, folks. But I immediately caught it when you said that. And knowing you, I think this is a guy who's had a few facefuls full of gravel, but dust himself off, get back up on the horse. And as my dad would say, get it behind you, keep moving. And you certainly have. There's a great story of success, but you know, for both of us, for anybody, whenever you see somebody who's talking about a story of success, I can assure you there are stories of failure. It's actually, quite frankly, I think that's what makes us wise. I've always said that wisdom consists of three things. It consists of success, it consists of failure, and then it consists of a conscious knowledge of the lesson learned from each. So, and you're hearing some lessons here. So let's just poke at that for one second. Tell me something that you failed at.
Well, you know, that book title that you mentioned, I couldn't use that because people would begin to think that I enjoy A Face Full of Gravel so much that I like to spend my time falling forward. I failed so many times in my life, and the big ones, I could pick out one or two, and I'll throw out about 13 years ago, I was hired in a company here in the National Capital Region, and I had a boss who wasn't he was someone who would push, but wouldn't do a lot of work. And I got this self-righteousness inside of me that said I was winning contracts and I was doing things. And really and truly, I was winning contracts, and I was making his boat row a little bit faster than what he was doing for the team. But ultimately, I ended up getting walked out of that company. They escorted me. I came to my computer station, asked me to box up all my stuff. And then I was escorted out without really a notice. And I sit back and look at that and think about how I brought that about. And this is the, you know, circling back in life is you get to take all the rough edges off of you, one rough edge at a time. And this self-serving, maybe arrogant nature that you can develop that said, I'm pulling my weight and other people aren't. Can get you in trouble. I heard a speaker a couple of years ago. I can't remember his name exactly because, you know, I've got dyslexia. But
was he bald?
No, it was Job Rollis, I think. Yeah. Job Rollis.
I'm telling you, the guy's bald. You haven't looked at him lately.
Yeah, well, you know, he's so strikingly handsome.
All right, what did I say?
And he said, if you can take in just 10% of the failure, if you can absorb that, then you can begin to recover from that stumble, that fall, and move on having grown a little bit. And, you know, when I look back at that particular failure, I probably own 50 or 60% of it, not 5 or 10% of it. But the first step, Rob, was to accept that first 5%. And I'll tell you that I can't recover those days. I can't recover that failure or the hurt that was associated with it in my own life, but I grew a lot from it. And I guess that's what life's all about. It's brushing yourself off and continuing to move forward.
Yeah. Well said. And I want to unpack that just for a moment. It's really important. Take a moment and think of what you just heard there. Whenever you hear yourself say that there was nothing that I could have done, I didn't do anything wrong, it was them. Whether it's the teacher at school, the principal, the PTA, the boss, the friend, whoever it is, whenever you hear yourself say that, and we're human beings, it's gonna come out of you, but catch it, stop it. And remember what JV said, listen, yeah, right. That's not a great teacher. Welcome to the real world. There's some wonderful, wonderful teachers. And occasionally we have one we just don't click with. Got it. But it's never all their fault and nothing about us. Because not only we evolve, folks, when we stop and say, wait a minute, what could I have done differently? When no one, JV and I aren't telling you that this is a 50-50 road. Could be, but we weren't there. What we're saying to you is, if you want to evolve, if you want to do yourself a favor and take that burden off your shoulders and remove the pain and get better and get smarter, then don't ever let yourself get boxed in with the victim mentality of there was not, none of this was on you. Always a little bit on us. I've had same thing. And believe me, I got to tell you, when I was in my 20s, I'm not so sure I would have caught this message so early, but as we grow and we evolve and we get a little wiser, we realize that there's always something to be gained, that experience was there for a purpose. Let's grab it. Let's learn from it. And now let's get it behind us. So I'm grateful that you brought that up. Let me ask you this. You've given us a ton of lessons here. Really enjoyed the conversation. Let's pick through the weeds a little bit. Pick the biggest lesson of your life. If you had to do that, sorry about that, but somebody's got to ask the question. If you had to get one of the biggest lessons, and I think it's asking somebody, what's their favorite movie? Well, today it's this, but ask me tomorrow, I'll give you a different one. So I'll take one of the top ones, but give me the biggest lesson out of your life. If you had to do that, what would it be?
I guess it's keep fighting. The days when I thought I would not survive is too big a word, but wouldn't get through it or wouldn't manifest the goals that I had in my head. Very often those days came 2 or 3 days prior to me actually winning the prize that I was fighting for. And you go back to my application process for the Thunderbirds. One of my closest friends is a 4-star in the Air Force now, but back then we were both majors, lieutenant colonels. And I had basically gotten, Rob, every place that I had told you. I'd beaten the medical evaluation board. I had gotten back into the return to fly. I was flying an F-16 again, and the application process had dropped, and I had the package almost completely done. And that Monday, prior to the application deadline, I was sitting in my office, and in walks my best friend, Todd Walters. And Todd said, "How's things going?" And I said, "I've got this package, but I don't think I'm going to put it in." And what I was fighting in my own head was the opportunity to be rejected. And I had the package built. I had two things that I needed to get done between that Monday and the Friday when the packages were due in. And he looked at me and said, "I think these two people will fulfill these two holes that you've got in your application process. And you really need to do this. This is something you need to do for yourself because you're the right guy for the job." And that landed with me in a way that I don't know if anybody else had told me other than Todd Walters. I'm not sure I would have gone forward and done the things that I needed to do and submitted that package that Friday. And here, I'm telling you, I'd overcome all of the big things, but now it was the internal doubts about me that I was facing. And for him to push me over that line, to give me that little encouragement I needed, that got me across that threshold and ultimately into the job that I'd been wanting for almost all of my life. And so this idea of even on your darkest day, even when you think things are piling on you in a way that you can't get to where you need to go, just put one foot in front of the other. And for whatever reason, you'll achieve things that you never thought were possible. And in those darkest moments, you'll be able to have a focus that is just basically as simple as the front end of your foot. Just put one foot in front of the other and you'll get there.
Yeah. Beautiful, beautifully said. And you know, if I could just add a little seasoning to that, that means, folks, that sometimes you're going to put that foot in front of the other and you're going to get a face full of gravel, as JB just said. But what's worse, not putting a foot in front of the other because of the fear of the gravel, or right, taking a little bit of gravel up the nose? It happens. We all take a punch now and then. The question is not will we, it's when we. And just what do we do afterwards? I think one of the greatest things that I learned, and JV and I both have a passion for helping people who are in career transition, is I learned a lot through them. And one of the things I learned was that there's nothing wrong with hoping. There's nothing wrong with putting all your cards on the table and say, I want it. I'm going to do everything in my power to go get it. And you know what? Just because I want it, I'm doing everything I can, doesn't mean we're always going to get it. But I'm going to dust myself off and keep going, because that beats the alternative of being too afraid to try. It's real easy to kind of take that too afraid to try path and put all sorts of excuses by it. Don't ever be afraid to try and fail. The alternative just, it's unthinkable to me. And I think you just heard that. JV, swing in, and I'm gonna let you address that. But I've got one final question, and I'll let you kind of wrap up what I was just talking about, what you were just talking about, into this workforce piece. This is a passion of both of ours. That's how JV and I met, by the way. We both volunteer at the same place that helps people in career transition. You're in my mind a subject matter expert on the topic at this point. So if you had to give one piece of advice, and we've already got plenty of them, but hone it down one more time, one piece of advice to someone entering the workforce today, what would it be?
Yeah, so it's a big question. For me, when I think about my life and the moments where I have felt most alive, most engaged, it's where every faculty that I had developed in my life was challenged. And it left me, those moments left me wanting other faculties that I hadn't completely developed, and it spurred me into improving in those areas. And for me, that job was the Thunderbird lead job. It's flying was the most demanding job I've ever had with regard to flying. The people aspects of it, leading a team and bringing them to new heights, I guess, out of a place where they were into a place they could be. And then the politics, the speaking, the writing aspects of it, every skill set that I had developed or spent my time developing over the course of my life was put to task. And the thing that I would encourage people to do is to lean for that job. Take your faculties, what you enjoy the most in your life, and build them to the highest level of skill set that you can, and then put them to test in a job that you know you would love doing. And that is what I would I would chore every person who's graduating from college with, it's not the easy ride. It's not jumping in the river and floating downstream. It's swimming upstream that's going to take you places that you want to go. And those moments will challenge everything that you've got. I've got a friend who has competed in Ironman competitions. I just actually learned that yesterday, as a matter of fact. And I think about that. I never challenged myself that way. But Rob, you've always been a guy who was basically ready to put forth the effort when everybody else was giving up, to not quit, to not give up. And I think that that's a microcosm of what I'm talking about, of being able to put yourself to task and stress yourself to the ends and your faculties to the lengths of their specific skill sets, and then live that life and that passionate moment. And that's what I think we should all strive for. One of my favorite quotes of all time is, it sounds like I've got a lot of quotes at the tip of my tongue, but this is about the only one I can cough up on demand. It was attributed to Napoleon. And he said, a leader is a dealer in hope. And when I think about leading teams, that's what's the thing that encourages people around you the most. But you can't forget to use that on yourself. We're all dealers in hope. Put something big out in front of you and drive forward and give it everything you've got. And once you get there, revel in the moment and then throw a bigger rock and challenge yourself with that. Life is wonderful. It's the greatest game that's ever been invented, and mine has been blessed in so many ways. It's hard to nail down the biggest, but I would say one of the bigger moments, one of the biggest gifts that I've been given, are the friends that have challenged me along the way. And Rob Jolliss, I'd have to put you near the top of the heap, if not at the top in that regard. You've been a great gift for me, and I am thankful to you for your presence in my life.
Well, I'm grateful you said that. And folks, I told you we weren't going to disappoint you today. A lot of times when I'm talking and interviewing people, I'll finish and add, I don't want to touch what you just heard. JV, I am so grateful you came on. Folks, if you're looking for a speaker, I always tell people that are looking at me when they want me to speak, don't look at my website. Don't worry about the brochures I can send you. Just listen. And what you heard is just a tremendous, tremendous speaker, author, a guy who can command the room. JV, how can people get a hold of you online?
I think the easiest way is through my website. It's jvvenable.com. And my email address is jv@jvvenable.com. If you got a leadership question or a poke or a prod, I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. And you also, on that website, don't you have a shot or two of you in the cockpit?
Yeah, there's one or two of a strikingly handsome guy and a steely ride. Yeah, I think there might be one or two on there.
What was I doing in the cockpit? I don't know. Anyway, JV Venable, thank you so much for being on Pocket Size Pep Talks. Folks, you got a good one today. Go out, stay motivated, stay inspired, and have yourself a great day.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's show, please rate and recommend it on iTunes, Outcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also get more information on this show and Rob at jolliss.com.